Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast presented by Agency Revolution, creators of Fuse, the insurance marketing software that skyrockets retention, boosts policy per customer, and makes your clients love your agency without you having to hire more staff, programmers, or technologists. Hey, if you haven't had a demo lately, I suggest you get one. Last time I saw it, blew my mind again. So once again, I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast. As always, I have the privilege, and I can say that again with full conviction, of introducing a very special guest. You very likely know his name. You very, very likely know his position and the organization that he leads. And if you do know him, you probably know his reputation is stellar. And you're about to find out why. Ken Carrier is the president and CEO of the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers, commonly called or often called the Council, an association representing the top tier of insurance brokerages that annually place more than $200 billion in commercial property and casualty and employee benefits premiums. Carrier authors On the Edge for Leader's Edge magazine, which, by the way, I read, which is part of what attracted me to reach out to Ken and ask him for his participation in the podcast series. The Council has expanded sixfold and solidified its position as the leading representative of the most successful insurance brokers in the nation and globally. The Council is currently home to 75 of the top 100 largest brokers in the U.S. Carrier's initiatives include the Council Leadership Academy, which provides talent development and resources to council members, the Council Foundation, which supports industry research and assists in attracting and developing the brokerage workforce of tomorrow, and on and on and on. Likewise, I could go on and on and about his accomplishments and his the recognition. Without saying much more, I did want to point out two things. One, in 2013, he was named one of the industry's top 100 game changers. And again, you're about to find out why. He also, one last thing, he serves on numerous boards, including the, I wanted to point out one thing out of his entire resume that resonated with me. And that is that he serves on numerous boards, including DC Central Kitchen, a nonprofit community kitchen that trains adults for culinary careers and provides 3 million meals for homeless, shelters, schools, and nonprofits. So those of you who know me well, know my family history and our own interests and my own personal background, you know, that resonates with me. That being said, you're about to discover, as I have known, that Ken Carrier is both insightful and delightful. The last thing he said to me at the end of our post-podcast conversation was, "Michael, keep rattling the cage and we'll all be okay." So this is Michael Janz rattling the cage and introducing you to Ken Carrier. Ken Carrier, how are you?
I'm great, Michael. All right. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for asking. Typically, I kind of let my guests like hold off on the pitch part, or you know, tell me about who you represent, kind of until the end. But what you're doing fits so much into what we're talking about. I'm going to ask you to tell me a little bit about the Council, and then we'll circle back to it later.
Okay. Well, Michael, I'm happy to talk about the Council. you know, we are an organization that represents the majority of the commercial insurance brokers in the marketplace these days. Our members write about 80% of commercial premium, and they're the dominant player in providing employer-provided benefits. And we as an organization are probably a little different than some because we really focus our attention on partnering with our members in helping provide them the kinds of information and filling the needs that they have as businesses as they determine where the business is moving and how it, what direction to go in. We obviously provide advocacy support, which is something that you can't do individually, but collectively makes more sense. But it goes beyond that. It's because we're in a very sophisticated business. We're in a business that that is changing very dramatically. And so the need for solid information and information and sort of not just simple information, but a sense of where things are going, a sophisticated view of where it is, and a sort of a dialogue and a partnership. And then we provide additional services to our members, including management training, executive training. We've developed the academy, as we call it. And we also host probably the more exciting of the programs, the annual Broker Smackdown, which is a gamification of running an agency. And there are four of them regionally, including one internationally, and then there's a national Smackdown where the teams sort of like Top Chef for insurance brokers.
Go broker that.
And it's a really fascinating thing to watch.
These teams compete
against each other, and they pick and choose the kinds of whatever their business looks like, and then they have to make some decisions, whether it's to go after a new market or to write a line for a new company. They have to make all kinds of decisions, and then the computer, obviously, as part of the game, makes changes in the market. And you're competing against four other teams, and so it's a lot of fun.
You see, world, being an insurance broker is fun.
It is fun, and you know it should be fun. And the other piece of it is that it probably takes an insurance guy and turns him into an insurance business person.
And
that's the real distinction.
Okay, I want to circle back to something you said because you essentially touched on what we talk about in this podcast. Where is it going? And what is the solid information that people need now in order to make decisions? So I want to circle in on that one before we do.
Okay.
The broker, the council has grown.
It has.
Yeah. Tell us just a little bit about that.
So we, you know, our history goes back 100 and some odd years. We used to be a just the convener of what used to be called, what we call the Insurance Leadership Forum, which is currently at the Broadmoor and for 97 years was in West Virginia. And the industry came together, and it was always, and we still view ourselves as that's a key role we play, because this is an industry that continues to rely on relationships as well as technology and other components to it. But what that means, what we've done is we've grown beyond just the convening part to these other services. We've also grown our focus on really focusing in on probably the most successful market leaders in each community. So we have a minimum size requirement in terms of revenues, which is has been at around $10 million for a while. But most of our members are in that 20-plus million. But we have a we're a new focus, a newly found focus in the last couple of years around that 10 to 20 because those are the firms that are just at the point where they're the tipping off point. Many years ago, one of the global leaders said to me that often there's generally a size that an office has to be in order to sustain itself. And we think right now that that is around 10 or 12 million. And then after that point, you become more sophisticated because you require that amount of money and resources to provide the services you need to your clients.
Okay. I want to ask you a question about about those agencies, and I, you know, this may be it's kind of a broader question about state of the industry. Do you see more agencies hitting that $10 million threshold? In other words, do you see agencies now, more and more agencies growing up into that size?
Yeah, well, let's talk about the whole piece. I mean, the mergers and mergers and acquisitions has had a real impact, the consolidation on the industry, and we've seen that. You look at the top 10 today and look at the top 10 years ago, it's a very different list. Having said that, it's a fountain. As organizations consolidate, we saw this happen in the financial services sector, banking in particular. Mm-hmm. As the banks merged, what happened? There was a fallout. There's some talent that that went off on its own, set up small shops that became medium-sized shops that become $10 million shops, and then they qualify for us.
Right.
And so we've seen a lot of that. And I would say to you that the number of agencies, I think there are less agencies than there were 20 years ago.
As a whole, right.
As a whole.
Yeah.
I think for a number of reasons. I think it's a challenge to be under $10 million in this industry and provide the level of service that you need to in the marketplace, and also to supply or to work with your carrier partners if mm-hmm. whatever relationship you have there, in generating the kind of business that makes sense. And so it's a real challenge, I think, there in that below $10 million.
Right.
And they're not as efficient producers of business.
Now, one specific question. Are you, when you talk about that $10 million threshold, specifically, are you focusing on the commercial broker and the benefit broker as opposed to the Main Street personal lines or
yes,
general?
We in general have always been focused on what I would call the non-Main Street broker.
Got it.
So our members, I would say that the percentage of their book that is represented by personal lines and even small commercial is pretty modest
mm-hmm.
compared to benefits and commercial.
And yet the volume may be considerable, but relatively speaking, but as a percentage of their book, it's fairly small. The focus is
it's small, and I think it's the margin pressure in that sector is so high that you have to be able to. I mean, there are a few of our members who have substantial representation in those books, but they've also figured out how to do it.
Ah.
Okay.
Okay. As long as you raise that one, inquiring minds want to know, and I have a feeling listeners' ears may have perked up. What do you think they do? Those large brokers where probably this major strategic focus, the major investments are going, perhaps towards those larger accounts and larger business, but I know you've got some members who have reliable, consistent income with good margins in personal lines and small commercial lines. How do you think they do that?
Well, they re-engineer their back room and they put money in it.
Okay.
Okay. It's really simple. I
uh-huh.
mean, if you're going to use pencil and paper, the margin isn't there to support that. So you've got to figure out how to be able to service those accounts in an efficient way. And the back room of this business has always been the challenge. And we've seen this over and over again, and we're seeing this in the InsurTech space, which, by the way, I hate the name InsurTech, but
okay,
we'll
talk about that. I think we got to live with it.
Yeah, we do have to live with it, but you know what it is? It's changing business process.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's not a separate industry. We're going to do something. We're going to deliver something differently, and someone's coming along with a solution. And the bulk of the solutions that we're seeing are really focused more on carriers than they are on brokers. But having said that, there are some good opportunities there for streamlining the back rooms of these agencies and how we interact business. And that's what the ones that are doing it in the digital space, around personal lines and small commercial, they've got wind in their wings. They're moving in the right direction. They're profitable, and they're providing the quality of the service that they need. And the behavior of those clients is changing as well.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
You know, you've got all of that. This is a really interesting time in this industry because we've never had, I think, where you've seen this convergence of generational changes, behavioral changes, technology changes, and just general movement of business. And people are doing things differently and thinking differently, and everything's moving faster. So you got all of it coming together.
You use the word interesting, and so I'm gonna dive into that one. Do you think your clients are having fun?
I think some are having a lot.
I guess it's the stress fun meter. You know, on the left side is, you know, the meter goes to stress. On the right side, it goes to fun, which kind of tends to happen in times of turbulence and speed. And so I'm trying to get my finger on the pulse of the industry about this right now because, you know, it's like my clients and the people that I hang with, they're not a fair representation, right? Because they kind of tend to have fun. They've figured out some of the solutions to their problems. And I'm curious what you think, you know, your members.
So I would say overall, I think the majority of these firms are having fun.
Okay.
There's been the leadership changes that have happened in a lot of these firms, and they've been structured leadership changes, have been had a positive impact on the strategic direction of a lot of these firms. And what I mean by that is they're doing the kind of things that they succeed at. I mean, if you look at the business and how well the business has done in the last few years, it's done really well.
Yeah,
these firms are doing well, and we're not talking about a hard market or a soft market or any of that stuff. Okay,
right.
Those days are gone. You're just
lobbing these balls at me that I'm gonna I keep having to hit. So I want to circle back to that one. Okay.
Yeah. No. The cycle market is dead.
Okay. So do you think that the pricing now is right? You know, that they've sort of figured it out. You know, like, because to some extent,
does it matter?
Okay, well,
the market is the market.
Okay,
and if you're mispricing a product, you're going to get screwed.
Right on. We've been in the industry long enough to see a couple of roller coasters, right? Hard market, soft market.
Those days, and people used to just wait for the market to change and they didn't make the kind of investments, but the kinds of people who were running firms then are very different than the people today. You know, 25 years ago, you had a lot of talented people who were amazing producers. And because of that, they ended up being in the CEO slot. You're seeing real talented managers, people who are business people running these organizations who may not necessarily be producers, directly, but indirectly.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
understand the business. And that's made a real change, I think, in terms of how the business functions and the discipline that's used internally.
Let's focus on that because I know that you've written about it, you talk about it, you've got some interesting reflections on what leadership means today. How do you think it's different?
Well, leadership today is, first of all, it's a huge challenge, and it's kind of lonely at times, because leadership is all about taking an organization, helping develop or having the vision of where it's going, and then helping to move people along. It's trying to make people comfortable with the changes that are affecting them around their lives, and allowing them to do what they do. I also think, by the way, that the leadership challenge around generational changes is huge here. So, for example, you have a CEO that is an Xer, trying to lead an organization of Xers, some boomers and you know, and these millennials that everybody talks about, and there's two groups of those.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's like having chickens and cows and pigs all in the same room and trying to lead them down a path. I mean, it just doesn't, they're different people and they have different life experiences, and because of that, leading them is a real challenge. So I think leadership today is as hard as it's ever been, but the key in our industry has been to be able to be open enough to understand what's going on around them and help move people down the same path, not necessarily having that vision for that organization. And I think that's really a challenge.
I think there's something that you wrote that references like an important, a critical part of leadership today is taking care of yourself. Yes, am I?
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about what your thoughts and reflections are on that.
Well, look, you know, leaders today are, you know, I've always described it a little bit like being pecked to death by ducks. because everybody wants a little piece of something, or they want your opinion on something.
Yeah.
And I think in order to really, you know, to really sort of have that clarity of mind to do what you need to do, you've got to take care of yourself. You've got to take that time to find that center that you have. You know, this sounds a little crunchy, but it's not. This is about being good to yourself. So that you've got that sort of understanding and a sensitivity that you need to run an organization.
All right, can I put you on the spot, Ken?
Yeah.
All right. You know, we all have groups to lead and teams to lead. You've got a considerable team to lead. Can I ask you, what do you do to take care of that part of your leadership? What do you do to attend to to yourself?
Okay, I do. There's some very sort of simple things I do, and then there's a couple things that include other people.
Yeah, okay.
The first one I do that includes other people is I belong to a CEO group.
Uh-huh.
I've belonged to it for almost 8 years now, and it is singly the most important thing I've done for me as a person and as a leader. To have clarity around what I'm doing.
Is it cross-industry?
It's cross-industry.
Uh-huh.
It's now private. It used to be part of an organization. We all quit, and then people said, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, okay.
Let's structure it ourselves, and uh-huh. We did. And it's 14 people, and it ranges from a guy that has a company that's, I don't know, almost $2 billion to, you know, and they've grown all during this period.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's really interesting. Okay, so
how often does that group meet?
That group meets once a month for 10 months. And they last about, they run from 9:30 to 1:30.
Okay, so good. Good for you. Yeah.
But it's so valuable. I will tell you that every time anyone brings a personnel issue to this group, the group looks at him or her, and uh-huh. We have a number of women leaders as well.
Yeah.
And we'll say, well, you know what to do. Fire them. Because we all don't shoot fast enough.
Okay. I'm laughing because I've facilitated similar, like mastermind groups for probably
right.
20 years. And that's a kind of, and we usually meet three times a year. We had that conversation takes place about three times a year.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly.
You know what to do, right?
You know, and if you think about it, if you're in that role and you're struggling with that, there aren't a lot of people you can talk to.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
right.
And so
right.
It really is. And having said that, this group also has held people's feet to the fire as if we're starting to make some changes and we talk about those and ideas or, you know.
Okay. Out of curiosity, mm-hmm. Does the group ever meet like off-site? Does it ever do a social event or a longer
yes.
event? Yeah, okay.
So we meet 10 times a year.
Uh-huh.
We don't meet in the summer a little bit, and then
yeah.
It's Christmas.
Okay, August and December, the typical months off.
Right.
Okay.
We have a Christmas party in December. We do a retreat for two nights in March. We have one of our members has a plane and just likes to host us in some of these houses he belongs to or has. And okay. So we do that. Uh-huh. But we always do an offsite. And it's half social and half not.
Yeah. Okay. Good. No, good for you. All right. So that's number one.
Is
you belong to a group. Okay.
Yep.
What else?
The other thing that I do, and I try to do this four times a week, and to me, this is the other thing I do to keep my head straight,
okay.
is I walk.
Okay.
And I try to walk 3 miles.
Uh-huh.
Now, it doesn't happen every week, but most of the time it does.
Do you do it alone?
I do that alone.
Yeah.
I don't have, I leave my technology behind.
Yeah.
I don't want to listen to music. It's really a chance for me to listen to my head.
Uh-huh.
And it's really, really helpful. Because without it, I can't find my center.
Yeah, good for you.
And honestly, those are the two major things I do. And one of the reasons I do the second one is I can do it anywhere. You know, I can be on the road somewhere and go for a walk.
Right.
And, you know, there's nothing like walking through a town and seeing the town.
Uh-huh.
And just getting a sense of where you are.
Yeah.
So those are the two major ones I do.
Okay.
And then I have two kids. And and they keep me centered.
Yeah, right on. Okay. They'll put life into perspective for you.
That's right.
Another related issue to being a leader is finding the talent and recruiting the talent to be on the team. And you've got some interesting reflections on that. Could you share that as well?
Sure. First of all, look, I'm gonna turn this a little because my attitude on recruitment is changing. First of all, I think the most important piece of recruiting anybody to an organization is first and foremost, what kind of culture do you have at your organization? What does mm-hmm. it look like? What's it feel like? What do people say about it? Do they like working there? Are they happy? And because of that cultural piece, I think the recruitment becomes easy if you've got that right. And I think one of the mistakes we uh-huh. make in this industry is we spend a lot of time talking to people, trying to convince people this is a really good industry. Hell, this is a great industry.
Yeah.
But it can be a great industry and a sucky place to work.
Okay, got it. Right.
And so if you've got a sucky place to work, I don't care how much money you spend.
Recruitment is not the solution to the problem, is it?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
And the other thing is, people want a cookie-cutter solution. There is no cookie-cutter. You've got to sort of piece this together. I think I have probably one of the most talented teams in Washington, by far.
Uh-huh.
How did I find them? I don't really know. I know we've hired a number of interns who've come through the ranks. You know, I look at our vice president of meetings. She was a staff associate. She was when she was hired many mm-hmm. years ago.
Yeah.
And she grew with the organization. That's a key piece. And I think organizations have to be able to sort of let people grow within them or grow out. But if they're not growing with the organization as the organization needs the changes, then it's time for them to move on to something else.
You have made some references to finding talent in, you know, maybe among segments of the population that we don't normally look at.
Right.
Right.
I'll give you a good example.
Okay.
We were looking for someone who could come in and work with our sponsorship and our couple programs.
Yeah.
And I just so happened to be, you know, at a PTA meeting at my kid's elementary school, and I became friends with a woman who was one of the most talented people I know. She was doing more stuff at that school. She had the technology. She's doing the directory. She's doing all this stuff. Well, I went and sat down and had coffee with her and said, I want you to come work for us. And she was like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't think so. I don't think I could do it. I don't know what the technology's like today. I said, don't worry about that. We'll teach you the technology. Come work for us.
Yeah.
Well, Kathy came and worked for us for, I think, 2.5 years. And what we had to do was help her build her self-confidence back that she could work again. There's incredibly talented people out there. We know that, I know the organization is at Waves.
Right.
Has done a lot of, you know, where we're taking really talented insurance people who've retired and bringing them back and letting them work again. We've got to be creative. We are not going to find 35-year-old brokers trained who we can then recycle.
Pre-packaged with a ribbon on them.
You know, okay. And the other thing is we can't always be looking for brokers. We can't be looking for what, quote, which I'm not a crazy fan of, the word producer.
Uh-huh.
Because that's not the only segment of these organizations. I mean, if you think about an organization that is $50 million in revenue, they have a lot more talented people than just producers.
Right.
The producers are there, but who's doing the real customer service?
Uh-huh.
The BSRs are.
Uh-huh.
You're going to need marketing people. You need all kinds of service people. So, and a person who can sell doesn't necessarily mean that it's a person who can service.
Right.
Because they're two different things.
Do you see... At the level that you operate with the larger brokers, do you see, because you made reference to the term marketing, which in our industry can be a confusing term. Do you see more of the larger firms hiring what I would call marketers on staff? In other words, I don't mean marketing upstream to carriers. I mean marketing, you know, to the marketplace.
Right. We're talking about classic marketing versus insurance marketing.
Yeah, right.
And in classic marketing, I can tell you, and I would even take the globals out of it, and I will tell you that the next 100 firms on the list of top 200 are hiring people who understand how to market and position themselves. Because if you're really an independent broker, it's really about your brand.
Right.
And in order to understand branding, you've got to be a marketing person. Marketing people are driving brand in this industry.
So,
and I think that's going to change some of the dynamics of how we look at producers and books of business.
Right, right. Who generates leads,
right?
Who's responsible for the ongoing nurturing of the customer relationship post-sale?
Right.
Who develops the customer journey? All that jazz
doesn't necessarily
fall to producer or broker
world. And it's going to take six other people behind that person to do all those things that a client expects.
Uh-huh.
And so you can see where we're seeing the margins are being stretched in some areas, which by the way, I think is a huge factor going forward. I think we are going to see margins change. But as part of that process, we're also going to see the way the compensation structure is laid out has to change, because there's more people involved in touching that client.
Ah, okay. For now, I'm going to let my imagination go wild on that one, but I think I know where you're what you're getting to. So, in regards to that marketer position, in the world you don't operate in as much, okay, I'll refer to Safeco's most recent annual or agency survey, and I think they're coming out with another one in a couple of months. So I'm going back a year and a half, I think, in terms of when this data was gathered. So we're talking about personalized agencies and mostly Main Street agencies. What they determined was that, as I recall, it was 56% of their agencies had hired a marketer, or at least somebody on the staff was doing marketing. Now, what I think, I've run into very quickly is that when people say marketer, often we just don't know what we're talking about. The average agency principal, they're not a marketer, so they're maybe hoping they can just check off a checkbox and say, okay, I got somebody doing social posting for me. I got that taken care of.
They think it's social media and PR and... Oh, right. We're sponsoring that fair down the street. That's not marketing.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I would guess, I don't want to disparage anybody, but I would guess that those smaller firms, that's their challenge, is that when you're talking about marketing, you're really talking about branding. You're talking about having a brand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not someone's name. It's an organizational brand.
Right.
It can be the name of somebody, but at the end of the day, it shouldn't matter because you want to keep that business.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, you've got to have a brand that people attach themselves to.
Right.
And so I would probably think the Safeco guys, a lot of the small, that's part of the Main Street challenge, which is in order to succeed and you look to the future, you've got to be growing. And any organization has to grow, even if it's, you know, a little
right.
bit, you still have to have some movement. And I think a lot of these organizations are struggling with that. And they're sort of misreading the tea leaves. I mean, if you don't have the kind of business that you're generating and you're providing efficient sort of, you're responding to the efficient needs of that client, I think you're challenged.
I think the research is pretty unequivocal that those who are investing in some form of marketing are seeing a return on their investment.
Yeah.
The challenge is, you know, as we go through and thrash our way through this period of turbulence, it is, you know, that's when industries mature, grow up, figure things out. And so I think part of what's happening now, and I'm trying to facilitate this conversation in the industry, is to recognize that marketing, number one, it's a very sophisticated skill set. You know, it's an entire skill set, right?
Right.
It's like,
and it's changing rapidly.
And it's changing really rapidly. And there are different levels of it. You know, so in other words, somebody could hire a marketing coordinator and they do social posting and they say, you know, happy Halloween or whatever, and a marketing director with a little more skill set, maybe a manager with a little more skill set, and then maybe a CMO. At the level, you know, some of your members might be big enough where, you know, they should have a CMO. They should have a chief marketing sure. officer who manages a team, and they've got, you know, the vision and the strategy, and they work closely with the CEO, and you know, it's a very comprehensive effort. The average agency is never going to have a full-time CEO CMO. There's no way to justify that, but they need to have some sense of what the outcomes are that they're expecting and the plan and the strategy and move, you know, some path forward. So
it's critical. And then, and you've also got, you make sure that that team, that sophisticated team, is not only generating the kind of leads you need, but people are closing that business. And then they're credited for that business that they've been bringing in.
Yeah.
That's a major change in the industry.
Right.
Because we don't usually credit anybody but a producer.
I know.
Right. And we've got members that are doing, you know, it's fascinating the kinds of stuff they're putting out there. They're tweeting out information that people need that catches someone's attention. I mean, these days, and if, you know, one of the things that I think is a challenge for the industry overall is if you look at the organizations, I kind of equate it to the same thing as being bilingual. So we are moving towards being bilingual organizations. Right now, we are single language industry. We're a single language industry. Digital and analytics are something that we just, not everybody has the capacity. And what people are doing is they're hiring sort of the strength of it in these organizations to push the capacity down. And 10 years from now, we won't even worry about this because everybody will be bilingual.
Right.
But right now, we're not.
Uh-huh. But and so the two languages are what, analog and digital?
Yeah, I would say analog and digital.
Or real world and digital world.
It's like yesterday or today.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. All right. I do want to ask you sort of one last big question, because you've referenced a bunch of big stuff, and I want to ask you to try to weave this together. So you've referred to all of the change, insurtech, changes in consumer behavior, emerging technologies that are, you know, from within the industry, emerging. You probably have, you know, in the back of your mind, technologies that are changing the nature of risk itself, on and on. All the above, changes in marketing, right?
Right.
So yes, interesting time to be an insurance broker or an agency CEO. If we said, all right, 3 years from now, like the next 3 years, Where is it going in 3 years? What does an agency owner need to do now to be viable 3 years from now?
Well, I think, first of all, let me give the industry something that it doesn't think about much. This is an industry that does respond to change and does it really, really well and has been doing it for hundreds of years.
Uh-huh.
Because okay. The world has changed every 10 years, and we've responded to it. We've responded to the risk needs. Everybody needs this product or this
right.
coverage.
Right.
It's not really a product. It's really
yeah.
they need the advice around the risk
uh-huh.
so that they can take risk and they can build new things. And, you know, SpaceX and a Tesla doesn't happen, didn't happen overnight. And the investors in that had to have some levels of protection. And so this industry does pretty well with change. It just doesn't seem to recognize it a lot.
Is it time to do it again? I mean, is this time for us to change again?
We're always changing.
We're always changing.
We're always changing. We're always going through a dynamic change. Okay, so now you look at the brokerage sector. I'm a big fan of the brokerage sector. I think we, because of the relationship with clients and the consultative a role that a broker has to play today, you are not selling products anymore. And if you are, you might as well just get out of the way, because if you can just sell a product, then unless there's a need there for some personal security, and I think that's what, you know, that's what the relationship piece is. It's really an opportunity for a broker to make some business person, you know, when a business person is buying insurance, they just want to know they're covered.
Uh-huh.
Don't give me the details.
Right.
Just tell me it's done. Okay? And then if there's a problem, fix it for me. And so I think that the broker role is growing rather than shrinking in the dynamics of the marketplace. And I think actually it's going to be interesting to see how the carrier market continues to evolve, because I think there's more and more capital players in the marketplace.
Right.
And there are more ways in which you can access capital. And because of the investment environment we've been in and the interest rate environment the last couple of years, there appears to be a lot of it around and more structure being put around it to be able to pick up and take risk. And we've seen some of that on some of the big stuff like Berkshire, when Berkshire went in and did the sidecar. You have those opportunities where someone's trying to basically sort of sweep in and use some of their capital in an efficient way. Having said all that, the broker itself is under a lot of pressure because the behavior changes. As we think of this, in the last couple of years, so if you want 3 years out, the last couple of years, think of what the iPhone has done to your life.
Right.
Think about when you go onto a website, how impatient you become when the website is slow.
What? 6 seconds?
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
Know, remember the old days where the little balls kept spinning around? Well, there's no balls anymore. Think about how you feel when you go into a website and you're trying to purchase something and you can't, it doesn't happen
yeah.
efficiently.
Right.
It doesn't happen like Amazon,
mm-hmm.
where you
mm-hmm.
go click, 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 and the thing is at your house.
And that, that afternoon, so somebody shows up at my
yeah.
house, right?
So the behavior's changing, the speed of change is really changing. And so the demands are different. So I think if I were sitting there listening and trying to figure out, okay, what do I do? Where do I start? First of all, understand what you do and do well. That's the first thing, because I think a lot of people try to be everything to everybody.
Uh-huh.
Okay, number two, I think I would, as a broker, I would say, do my clients value my advice and counsel and what I'm bringing to the table, or are they really just looking at me dropping a product off? Because if you're just delivering a product, then you're just a used car dealer.
Right on. Okay.
Okay. You're not doing anything.
Uh-huh.
And a packaged product doesn't really. I mean, it's nice to have a general liability product, but and some property products. But at the end of the day, a product is like a box. And who wants to be in? No business is in a box. Every business is a little different. And so you want to make sure that you've got your niches figured out. And then listen to your client. Listen to your client, because people don't listen. They think they know, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I were you, I'd be listening to my clients on what their needs are. Why are they, how are they changing? You want to find out how they want their product delivered? Go talk to them.
Right.
Ask them. Just ask them.
Uh-huh.
You know, do you want to see me twice a year or not? Do you really want me to take you out to dinner, or you just want me to come in and drop, you know, and talk to you about your business?
Or do you just want the tickets to the game?
Yeah, exactly.
Without, you know, without me.
Yeah, you want to take your kids there.
Instead
so
of me.
I think that you just have to be aware. I also think it's really important to be involved with other peer groups of people.
Yeah.
You've got to be around your peer group. You learn from each other. You know, I chuckle because we've always been referred to as Switzerland.
Oh.
At our meeting.
Okay.
At our meeting.
Yeah.
Some of the CEOs whose organizations bloody each other in the streets will sit down at the same table with other CEOs and have a conversation that's very honest and real. And, you know, there is no secret sauce here.
Uh-huh.
I don't believe it. I don't believe in secret sauce.
Yeah.
You know, if that were the case, there'd be a lot more money in this industry.
Okay.
So that's what I would be doing. I don't think the other thing is that you can't prescribe it. And I think our industry wants, like, the package. What is the package? We were pressured for a long time on talent acquisition. So what do I do? What do I do? Well, hell, if you haven't figured out how your succession planning is going to be for your own organization, then I think that's a problem. You know, that's like figuring out where your next customer is going to come from.
Right, right. It's just the biggest.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
The biggest sale. All right, Ken, if people want to learn more about the council and or perhaps, you know, if they had a question for you, how should they make contact?
Well, probably the best way is CIAB.com.
CIAB, okay.
.com, and I'm listed right on there. And I'm happy, anyone who wants to reach out to me, just reach out, and I'm happy to talk to anybody.
Ken, this was an engaging and delightful conversation. I want to thank you for your time and for sharing your wisdom.
Thank you, Michael, and I urge you to keep rattling the cage.
Because, trust me.
The more we do that, the better off everybody is.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking Media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.